by Mrs. Henry Wood. Adapted for radio in 7 parts by Michael Bakewell. With Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moya Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Edridge as Francis Leveson, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. East Lynne, Part 2, The Keepers of the Dead.
The news of the death of Lord Mount Severn spread rapidly. It generally does on the death of a peer, if he have been of note, whether good or bad. It was known in London before the day was over, the consequence of which was that by Saturday morning early a shoal of what the late Earl would have called harpies had arrived to surround East Lynne. There were creditors for small sums and for great, for 5 or 10 pounds up to 5 or 10,000. Some were civil, some impatient, some loud and rough and angry. Some came to put in executions on the effects, and some...
What are you people doing here? Why are you watching over him?
Are you his daughter, miss?
I am, yes.
Yes, we heard you have no other relative nigh him.
What do you want?
Well, I don't mind telling you. We've been obliged, miss, to perform an unpleasant duty and secure him.
Secure him? What do you mean?
Well, you see, miss, your father, unfortunately, owed a lot of money, as you perhaps be aware on, and our employers is in deep. So, as soon as they heard what had happened, they sent us down to arrest the dead corpse, and we have done it.
Arrest the body? Oh, God. Oh. Mr. Mason. Mr. Mason, there's men in my father's room.
What men, my lady?
I don't know. I don't know. I think they're going to go on sitting there. They say they have taken Papa.
Taken him?
There must be some authority here. Oh, where is the young lady? You know nothing about the old affair.
Lambert, what is all this?
Oh, my lady, don't come in. You cannot do any good. I've sent for Mr. Carlyle and expect him here every moment.
Did Papa owe them all money?
I'm afraid he did, my lady.
Then I must see them. What do you want?
Your father owed me £500, my lady.
I had the misfortune to be your father's vintner, my lady. He has not paid me for 2 years.
And I owe you, yeah, for 200 guineas.
I see this. A promissory note for £650.
What can I do? I have no money to give you.
Eh? No, my lady. If the report tells true, you're more wrong than we are, for you won't have a roof to put your head under or a guinea to call your own.
Perhaps you'll answer us one question, miss. Is there any ready money?
What is the meaning of this? What do you want?
If you're a friend of his lordship, you ought to know what we want. We want our debts paid.
This is not the place to come to. You must go to the offices of Warburton and Ware.
No, we've been to them and received their answer. They said there was nothing for anybody.
At any rate, you will get nothing here. Allow me to request you to leave the house at once.
I warn you of the consequences
of refusal. You are trespassing upon a stranger's property. This house was not Lord Mount Severn's. He sold it some time ago.
Why? Do you really expect us to believe a story like that?
Who are you trying to fool?
We've heard tricks like that before.
Gentlemen, I give you my word of honour. This estate, with the house and all that it contains, passed legally from the hands of Lord Mount Severn some months ago. He was only a visitor in it.
Who purchased it?
Mr. Carlyle of West Lynne. Some of you may possibly know him by reputation.
I've heard of him. A cute young lawyer, as his father was before.
I am he. And being a cute lawyer, as you do me the honour to decide, you cannot suppose that I should risk my money upon any sale not perfectly safe and legal. East Lynne is mine. Now, as this is my house and you have no claim upon me, I shall be obliged for you to withdraw.
Mount Severn was a cursed scoundrel, whatever he may have been.
It does not give you the right to outrage the feelings of his daughter. And I should have thought that men calling themselves Englishmen would have despised gained the same. What I hear. Allow me, Lady Isabel. I will remain and deal with the business.
Thank you, Mr. Carlyle. Gentlemen. Gentlemen, I... Oh, God. I'm sorry. I did not know anything of this. My father's affairs were not spoken of before me. I believe I have not anything. If I had, I would divide it amongst you as equally as I could. But should it ever be in my power, should money ever be mine, I will thankfully pay all your claims. That's
good enough for me.
I'm so grieved. Had I foreseen this annoyance, you should have been spared it. Can you go upstairs alone, or shall I call Mrs. Miss?
Yes. I can go alone. I'm not ill. Only frightened and sick. This is not the worst. There are two men with Papa.
With your father?
They cannot understand it, and it terrifies me. They are sitting in the room next to him, and they have taken him, they say.
This is monstrous. I will clear the house off them, Lady Isabel.
But the custodians of the dead could not be so dismissed. These men sitting over Lord Mount Severn enforced heavy claims, and there they must sit until the arrival of Mr. Vane from Castle Marling, the new Earl of Mount Severn.
But where is he? He should have been here before this.
Is the post in?
I don't know. I've received nothing.
Come in.
These letters have just arrived for you, my lady.
Thank you, Lambert.
Ma'am?
Castle Marling Crest. It is Mrs. Vane's writing. My dear Isabel, I am dreadfully grieved and shocked at the news conveyed in Mr. Carlyle's letter to my husband, for he has gone cruising and I opened it. Goodness knows where he may be, but he said he should be home by Sunday. And as he is pretty punctual in keeping his word, I expect him. Be assured he will not lose a moment in hastening to East Lynne. Believe me, dear Isabel, with sincere sympathy and regret, faithfully yours, Emma Mount Severn. Mm. Oh, I thought she might have signed herself Emma Vane until my father was in his grave. It is most unfortunate.
Since the previous morning, Lady Isabel seemed to have grown old in the world's experiences. Instead of being a young lady of position, of wealth and rank, she had become a pauper, an interloper in the house she was inhabiting.
But how am I to pay the servants? Money is owing to all of them.
You must leave that to Mr. Vane's discretion.
Mr. Carlyle, how long has this house been yours?
The purchase was completed in June. Did Lord Mount Severn never tell you?
Not a word. And all this time we've been your guests. Are all these things yours?
Well, not the knives and forks, not plate and linen.
And those poor men who were here yesterday have a right to them.
I scarcely know. I believe the plate goes with the entail, and the jewels go also. The linen cannot be of much consequence either.
And my clothes, are they my own?
Well, they are certainly no one else's.
I feel my position thus to be intruding upon you for shelter.
No.
Oh, Mr. Carlyle, are Papa's affairs really so bad as they said yesterday? Is there nothing left?
I fear things are not very bright. But there may be some settlement effected for you.
No, I never heard of a settlement, and I am sure there is none. I see the worst plainly. I have no home and no money. This house is yours. The townhouse and Mount Severn go to Mr. Vane, and I have nothing.
But surely Mr. Vane will be delighted to welcome you to your old home.
Home with them? What are you saying, Mr. Carlyle?
I beg your pardon, Lady Isabel. I should not have presumed to touch upon these points, but
no, No. I think I ought to beg yours. I am only too grateful for the concern you are showing, but I could never make my home with Mrs. Vane.
On Sunday, a post-chaise was driven furiously up the drive to East Lynne. It contained the new Lord Mount Severn, arrived from Castle Marling. Mr. Carlyle soon joined him, And almost at the same time, Mr. Warburton, the lawyer, arrived from London. Business was entered upon immediately.
It is the most iniquitous affair I ever heard of. Of all reckless fools, Mount Severn must have been the worst.
Unpardonably improvident as regards his daughter, Mr. Fenn. I beg your pardon, Lord Mount Severn.
Improvident? Must have been rank madness. No man in his senses would leave a child to the mercy of the world as he has left her.
There is nothing to provide for her personal wants?
Not a halfpenny in the world. And there are no funds, and will be none, that I can see for her to draw upon. Is that not so, Warburton?
Quite correct, my lord. The entailed estates go to you, and what trifling matters of personal property may be left, the creditors will take care of.
But he could have done something. I mean, he might have insured his life for a few thousands, if nothing else. The child is without anything, without even pocket money. Do you understand?
Unfortunately, I understand all too well. But your lordship has only a faint idea of the burdens Lord Mount Severn had upon him. Not to speak of the kites he let loose.
Yes, I know. Drawing one bill to cover another, that was his system.
Draw? He would have drawn a bill upon Aldgate Pump. It was a downright menu with him.
But let us get on with our business. What money is there lying at his bankers, Warburton? Do you know?
None. We overdrew the account ourselves a fortnight ago to meet one of his pressing liabilities. There is not enough to half satisfy our own claims.
And what are the two men upstairs? The men with the late Earl?
I don't understand you.
But did you not know that they've seized the corpse? Two men have been posted over it like sentinels since yesterday morning.
By George.
Is it possible that transactions so infamous are permitted by our law? Well, what will be done? But cannot we bury him?
Well, I fancy not. The housekeeper, Mrs. Mason, told me this morning she feared they would not even suffer the coffin to be closed. That ought to be done with speed.
Oh, it's perfectly horrible.
Well, who has done it? Do you know, Mr. Carlyle?
Someone of the name of Anstey. The claim is about £3,000.
Oh, if it's Anstey who's done it, it is a personal debt of the Earl's, really owing every penny of it. Oh, a sharp man to hit upon such a scheme.
And a shameless and scandalous man. But he must be accommodated if the Earl is to be buried. Be so good as to talk with those scoundrels, Warburton.
Two mourners only attended the funeral, the Earl and Mr. Carlyle. The latter was no relative of the deceased, and only a recent friend, but the Earl had invited him, probably not liking to parade alone his trappings of woe. Some of the country aristocracy were pallbearers, and many private followers followed. All was bustle on the following morning. The Earl was to depart, and Isabel was to depart, but not together. The Earl was speeding to London, and the chaise to convey him to the railway station was already at the door when Mr. Carlyle arrived.
Forgive me, I was delayed by a very demanding client.
I was beginning to fear you would not be here. I've barely 5 minutes to spare. I must catch the morning train to London. Now, you're sure you're fully understood about the tombstone?
Oh, perfectly. Is Lady Isabel going with you?
No, I've arranged that she should go down to Castle Marling. I'll join her there in a few days' time. I've retained her butler, Lambert, in my service. She should be safe with him.
And how is she?
Oh, very downhearted, I fear, poor child. Well, she did not breakfast with me. Mason told me she was in a convulsion of grief.
My lord?
Lambert, let Lady Isabel be informed that I'm ready to depart and that I wait to see her.
Very well, my lord.
And while she's coming, Mr. Carlyle, allow me to express my obligation to you. How I should have got through this worrying business without you, I cannot divine. You've promised mine to pay me a visit, and I shall expect it speedily.
A promise conditionally that I find myself in your neighbourhood.
Lambert said that we are ready to leave.
My time is up, Isabel, and I must go. Is there anything you wish to say to me? I suppose not. You'll have no trouble whatever, my dear. Lambert will see to everything. Only mind you have some refreshment in the middle of the day, for you won't be at Castle Marling before dinner time. And tell Mrs. Tell Lady Mount Severn that I had no time to write, and will do so from town.
Cousin,
what is it? You wish to say something?
I do not like to ask you, but I have no money.
Bless me, Isabel, I declare I forgot all about it. Not being accustomed to... Isabel, I've run myself very short and have little beyond what will take me to town. You must make £3 do for the present, my dear. Lambert has all the funds for the journey.
Thank you.
Farewell, my dear. Make yourself happy at Castle Marling.
I shall be home soon.
Will you do me a favor, Mr. Carlyle?
I'll do anything I can for you.
Give this sovereign to Mr. Kane. I told Marvel to send and pay him, but it seems she forgot and he's not paid. The tickets were a sovereign. And give him this for tuning the piano.
Half a sovereign is far too much. He charges 5 shillings.
Oh, no, he was a long time occupied with it. It is not too much. He wants money even more than I do. You must think me very weak. But what else could I do?
What do you mean?
I mean my accepting to go to Castle Marling. There was no alternative open to me. I cannot... I do not know how to earn my own living. I can only accept to live with Lady Mount Severn. The time has come for me to go, Mr. Carlyle. I am about to leave you a legacy. Those pretty gold and silver fish that I bought a week back.
But why? Do you not like them?
Take them to Lady Mount Severn. No, I would rather leave them with you. Throw a few crumbs into the globe now and then.
Oh, please sit down for a moment.
No, I'd better go at once.
Then I'll see you to your carriage.
I have not said a word of thanks to you for all your kindness, Mr. Carlyle. I am sure that you have seen I could not.
I wish I could have done more. I wish I could have shielded you from the annoyances you've been bound to endure. Should we ever meet again?
Oh, but we shall meet again. You promised Lord Mount Severn.
True. We may meet casually once in a way. But our ordinary paths in life lie far and wide apart. God forever bless you, dear Lady Isabel.
He drew down the blinds and leaned back in an agony of tears. Tears for the home she was leaving, for the father she had lost. As her eyes cleared, she saw a bit of crumpled paper lying in her lap.
It's for £100. How? Mr. Carlyle, it can only have been he. How dare he insult me so?
But when she came to remember the somber facts of the last few days, her anger subsided into admiration for his wondrous kindness. Did he not know that she was without a home to call her own, without money, except what would be given her in charity?
I will not return it. It would pain him. I will keep it until I have a chance of handing it back to him personally.
Within hours of Lady Isabel's departure, news had spread that Mr. Carlyle was the new owner of East Lynne and that Lady Isabel was no better than a pauper. And while West Lynne exclaimed in wonder, the new Lord Mount Severn reached London to find none other than his own wife, whom he believed to be safe at Castle Marling.
I thought I could order my morning so much better in person.
I'm sorry you should have chosen to do so, Emma. Isabel has gone today to Castle Marling.
What's she gone there for?
Well, it is the most disgraceful thing ever. Mount Severn has died worse than a beggar, and there's not a shilling left for Isabel. She has nothing but the clothes she stands up in.
Where will she live? What will become of her?
Well, she must live with us.
With us? That she never shall.
Well, you can scarcely turn her out into the road or send her to the workhouse. I think you might show better feeling, Emma. Oh. Well, in any case, she will not trouble you long. One so lovely as Isabel will be sure to marry early. Many a man will be too ready to forget her want of fortune for the sake of her face.
She shall marry the first who asked her. I shall see to that.
Meanwhile, Lady Isabel had arrived at Castle Marling, which was not a castle, you may as well be told, but only the name of a town very near to which was the residence of Lord Mount Severn.
Oh, no, my lady. I fear that her ladyship will not be home for some days. She left only yesterday for London.
But Lord Mount Severn assured me that...
Never fear, Lady Isabel. You will be well looked after. Castle Marling shall not fail you in its hospitality.
Captain Lawson.
I apologize for the absence of my cousin.
And my mother and I are staying here for a week or two, at least until the end of Holy Week. I will do my best to make up to you for Emma's not being here to welcome you. I am sure we will not lack for amusement.
But is there nothing that can be salvaged from the wreckage?
Not a penny. Not a stick of furniture, nothing.
Your father has got through all of his great fortune.
All of it and more besides. I shall never be able to repay his debt.
Your father had been a great gambler by all accounts. He was not a man to live safely or cautiously. A nobleman who loved life and lived it passionately.
He told me once that he had never dreamed that he would become Lord Mount Severn. He was a poor barrister and three men stood between him and the title. But one died of fever, another was drowned at Oxford, and a third was struck down by apoplexy. Suddenly he found himself the possessor of 60,000 a year. He threw all prudence to the wind.
A man after my own heart. I loathe a miser.
He soon found himself the centre of a glittering society. He was quite handsome when he was young, I think.
He must have been irresistible if his features were anything like your own.
Captain Leveson, I forbid you to make such remarks in my presence.
Is it true that he eloped with your mother to Gretna?
The family considered his attachment to my mother to be unwise and foolish. He married her out of love with no thought to the consequences. She was a good and affectionate wife to him. She died when I was 13.
And you are all alone in the world.
I was their only child. I knew that he wished for a son. He was greatly disappointed.
No one could be disappointed with a child as fair as you, Isabel.
Captain Leveson, I knew that it was unwise of me to ride out with you unchaperoned.
You and I, Isabel, were not intended to be shackled by the conventions of polite society. We are two proud souls, you and I. Noble, passionate, ready to dare the world to do its work. You are your father's daughter, Isabel. You must have the courage to live your life to the full as he did.
You will say that Lady Isabel was foolish to permit Captain Leveson to pay court to her in this way. But she was alone and defenseless. Recently bereaved of a father who had been her whole life, strangely cast adrift in an unfriendly world, a reluctant inmate in a house where she was not welcome. In the captain's company, 10 days at Castle Marling passed like a dream.
Do not fear for the future, Isabel. Beauty like yours will never fail to find its admirers. There isn't an available bachelor in the land who wouldn't be honored by the thought of you as an adornment to his household.
And then Lord and Lady Mountseven returned. Lady Mountseven lived only on admiration, and she gathered around her those who would offer her its incense. She was the very essence of envy, of selfishness. She had never been known to invite a young and attractive woman to her house. She would as soon have invited a leper.
I see that you have been taking every possible advantage of our absence, Isabel. Your daily excursions with Captain Leveson must have restored the colour to your cheeks. But have a care. While we are obliged to extend to you the hospitality of Castle Marling, we do not intend that we should be touched by any breath of scandal. Do I make myself clear?
Things went on pretty smoothly until Good Friday. But it was a deceitful calm. My Lady Emma's jealousy was kindling, for Captain Leveson's attentions to Isabel were driving her wild. More welcome to her that all the world, rather than he, had given admiration to Isabel. Why did she have him there, throwing him into Isabel's companionship as she had done the previous year in London, asks the listener?
It is more than I can tell. Why do people do foolish things? On Good Friday afternoon, Isabel strolled out with Mount Severn's son and heir, little William Vane. Captain Leveson joined them, and they never came in until nearly dinner time, when the three of them entered together. There was barely time to dress for dinner, and Isabel went straight to her room.
We must be quick, Marvel. I quite lost touch with time. See what you can do with my hair as quickly as you can.
I'll do my best, my lady.
We went down to the pool to look for the car. And there was this great big one.
Where have you been?
Strolling about the shrubberies and grounds.
We went down to the pool, Mama.
With Captain Leveson.
William was with us.
Do not seek to involve the child.
What do you mean?
How dare you disgrace yourself?
I do not understand you. Marvel, you are pulling my hair.
I'm sorry, my lady. It is not sufficient that you are allowed an asylum in my house, but you must also disgrace it. 3 hours you have been hiding yourself with Francis Leveson. You have done nothing but flirt with him from the moment he arrived. You did nothing else with him.
I do not flirt. I have never flirted. I leave that to married women. So it seems to me it is a fault less venial in them than a single one. There is but one inmate of this house who flirts, so far as I have seen. It is you, not I, Lady Mountjoy.
Oh, how dare you!
Isabel lay through the livelong night, weeping tears of anguish and indignation. She could not remain at Castle Marling. Who could do so after so great an outrage? Yet where was she to go? She had not flirted with Captain Leveson, but she had received his attention and suffered his admiration. A woman never flirts where she loves, and it had come to love, or something very near it, in Isabel's heart.
Who is it?
Mama's going out with Captain Leveson. We can go down now, Isabel. No one will be there.
There's a gentleman, my lady. He says he wishes to see you.
To see me, or does he wish to see Lady Mount Severn?
He asked for you, my lady. Here is his card.
Mr. Carlyle. Oh, show him in.
Yes, my lady.
Shall I go?
Oh, no, William, please stay.
Her ladyship will see you, sir.
Thank you.
This is indeed an unexpected pleasure, Mr. Carlyle. How very glad I am to see you.
Business brought me yesterday to Castle Marling. I couldn't leave it again without calling on you. I hear that Lord Mount Severn is absent.
He's in France.
Ah.
I said we should be sure to meet again. Do you remember, Mr. Carlyle, when we parted, you...
What a fine boy.
This is Lord Vane.
How do you do? A truthful, earnest spirit, I'm sure.
You do not know this gentleman, William. It is Mr. Carlyle, and he has been very kind to me.
I shall like you, sir, if you are kind to Isabel. Are you kind to her?
Oh, very, very kind. I don't know what to say, Mr. Carlyle. The note you pressed into my hand in the carriage. I ought to thank you. I did not intend to use the money, but...
I do not know what you're talking of. I have a great misfortune to break to you, Isabel.
Misfortune?
2 of your fish are dead. The gold ones.
Are they?
I believe the frost killed them. I don't know what else it could have been.
You're very good to take care of them all this time. How is East Lynne looking? Is it occupied?
Not yet. I've spent some money upon it. It repays the outlay. You are changed, Lady Isabel.
I cannot expect to look so well at Castle Marling as I did at East Lynne.
I trust it is a happy home to you.
No, it is a miserable home, and I cannot remain in it. I have been awake all night thinking where I can go, but I cannot. I cannot tell. I have not a friend in the whole wide world.
I will tell you why she wishes to go away. Mama beat her yesterday when she was angry.
Quiet, William.
2 great slaps upon her cheeks, and Isabel cried for her. Marvel came with the nursery in the room at tea and told Nurse about it. She says Isabel is too good looking.
William, that is enough. Run along to the nursery at once.
Very well. But it's true what she says all the same.
I wish I could help you. East Lynne was not, take it for all in all, a pleasant home to you, but it seems you changed for the worse when you left it.
Not a pleasant home. Oh, indeed it was. I may never have so pleasant a one again. Oh, Mr. Carlyle, do not disparage East Lynne to me. Would I could awake and find the last few months but a hideous dream, that I could find my dear father alive again, that we were still living peacefully at East Lynne. It would be a very Eden to me now.
There is but one way. only one way in which you could return to East Lynne, and that, I may not presume, perhaps, to point it out.
Yes.
But if my words offend you, Lady Isabel, check them as their presumption deserves, and pardon me. May I, dare I, offer you to return to East Lynne as its mistress?
Return to East Lynne as its mistress?
And as my wife.
Let go my hand.
Take both of them, Lady Isabel.
What a charming picture.
Lady Mount Severn.
I'm sorry that Lord Mount Severn should be absent, to whom I have the pleasure of being known. I am Mr. Carlyle.
I have heard of you, but I had not heard that you and Lady Isabel were on the extraordinary terms of intimacy that...
Madam, we have never yet been on terms of extraordinary intimacy. I was begging Lady Isabel to grant that we might become so. I was asking her to become my wife.
How very grateful she must feel to you. And pray, what is Lady Isabel's answer?
Mr. Carlyle, will you give me a few hours for consideration?
I'm only too happy that you should afford it consideration, for it speaks to me of hope. I will be here again this afternoon, Lady Isabel.
It was a perplexing debate that Lady Isabel held with herself in the solitude of her chamber. That Mr. Carlyle was not of rank equal to her own, she scarcely remembered. She forgot that her position at East Lynne as Mr. Carlyle's wife would not be as it had been as Lord Mount Severn's daughter. She liked Mr. Carlyle much. She experienced pleasure in conversing with him.
But there is the other side of the question. It is not only that I do not love Mr. Carlyle, but I fear I do love, or very nearly love, Francis Levison. I wish he would ask me to be his wife, or that I had never seen him.
Isabel, where have you been hiding yourself?
Captain Levison,
did you hear about mishap with the pony carriage?
No, I did not.
I was driving Emma into town. The pony took fright, kicked, plunged, and went down upon his knees. Emma took fright in her turn, got out, and walked back. I gave the brute some chastisement and brought him to the stables, getting home in time to be introduced to Mr. Carlyle. He seems an out-and-out good fellow, Isabel, and I congratulate you. Now, don't start so. We are all in the family, and Emma told me. I won't betray it abroad. She says East Lynne is the place to be coveted. I wish you happiness, Isabel.
Thank you. You are premature in your congratulations, Captain Levison.
Am I? Keep my good wishes, then, till the right man comes. I am beyond the pale myself and dare not think of entering the happy state. I have indulged dreams of it, like others. But I cannot afford to indulge them seriously. A poor man with uncertain prospects can only play the butterfly. Perhaps to his life's end.
Mr. Carlyle, my lady.
Goodbye, Isabel. Carlyle?
Oh, how do you do?
And good luck.
Well, have you decided to grant my prayer?
Yes. But I have to tell you that...
Tristan, we can both afford to wait now, Isabel. You've made me very happy.
Oh, I ought to tell you. I must tell you. Though I have said yes to your proposal, I do not yet... It has come upon me by surprise. I like you very much. I esteem you and respect you. But I do not yet love you.
And I should wonder if you did. But you will let me earn your love, Isabel.
Oh, yes. I hope so.
My dearest. It is all I ask.
The wedding was to take place immediately. All concerned had a motive for hurrying it on. Only from West Lynne did Mr. Carlyle conceal his intentions. perhaps through fear that Miss Cornelia might endeavor to frustrate the marriage, should news of it reach her ears.
A letter has come from Mr. Archibald, Miss Cornelia. The postman left it in the office. We've one to ourselves.
Why, Dill, what is he to write to me about? Does he say when he's coming home?
You'd better see, Miss Cornelia. He does not say anything about his return in mine.
My dear Cornelia, I was married this morning to Lady Isabel Vane. Oh, it's a hoax. It's a hoax, I say. What are you standing there for, like a gander on one leg? Is it a hoax or is it not?
I am overdone with amazement, Miss Corny. It is not a hoax.
Oh.
I have had a letter, too, and he has sent this to be inserted in the county journals. They are married, sure enough.
Married on the 1st of May at Castle Marling? Oh, I will never forgive him. And I will never forgive or tolerate her, that senseless idiot to go and marry Mount Severn's expensive daughter, a thing who goes to court in feathers and a train.
He is not an idiot, Miss Corny.
He is worse. He's a wicked madman. He must have been stark staring mad to go and do it. And had I gathered an inkling of the project, I would have taken out a commission of lunacy against him. Oh, where are they going to live?
I expect they will live at East Lynn.
Live at East Lynn? He can never be fool enough to think of living there with an expensive girl not worth a shilling. Oh, idiot. Idiot, what possessed him? West Lynn shall know what I think of this depraved union.
Fell upon me this morning like a thunderbolt, Barbara.
What news? What has happened?
You remember that child, Mount Severn's daughter? She that arrived at the village concert with her white robes and her jewels and her flowing hair, looking like a young princess in a fairy tale?
Yes, what of her?
Archibald has married her.
It is not true, Cornelia.
It is quite true. They were married yesterday at Castle Marling by Lord Mount Severn's chaplain. Had I known it then and could have got there, I might have contrived to part them. But yesterday was one thing and today's another, and of course nothing can be done now.
Excuse me an instant. I forgot to give an order Mama left for the servants.
An order left for the servants. She swiftly rushed to her room, where she flung herself on the floor in utter anguish. The past had cleared itself of its mists. The scales that were before Barbara's eyes had fallen from them. She saw now that while she had cherished false and delusive hopes in her almost idolatrous passion for Archibald Carlyle, she had never been cared for by him. Even the previous night, she had lain awake some of its hours, indulging dreams of the sweetest fantasy. And that was the night of his wedding day. She knew that from that hour, her life's sunshine had departed. She forced her manner to calmness and returned to Cornelia.
It is a most unsuitable match.
It is just as suitable as Beauty and the Beast in the children's story. She, a high-born beauty, brought up to revel in expense. And he, a bear. A dull bear of a lawyer, like the beast in the tale.
But where are they to live?
At East Lynn, if you please. Oh, I was up there this morning, and I find that Archibald has installed there 5 dandies of servants in striped jackets playing at footmen, and 3 of my damsels decked out in fine mousseline de laine gowns. Oh, I shall go up tomorrow and dismiss the lot, and take myself and my servants to East Lynn, and let my house furnished. Fine sort of household Archibald would have of it at East Lynn, with that ignorant baby to direct it.
But will she like that?
If she does not like it, she'd lump it. I would almost as soon have told you he was in his coffin than told you my news.
And are you sure you are not jealous?
Perhaps I am. Perhaps, had you brought up a lad as I have brought up Archibald, and loved nothing else in the world, you would be jealous. When you found him discarding you with contemptuous indifference and then taking a young wife to his bosom to be more to him than you had been.
Come in.
Lord Mount Severn, my lady.
Show him in.
Isabel, I've been searching every hotel in London for you since I saw the papers. Why was I kept in ignorance of this?
I did not know that you were kept in ignorance of it. Mr. Carlyle wrote to you, as did Lady Mountseven.
I suppose this comes of your father having allowed him to dance daily attendance with East Lynne. And so you fell in love with him.
Indeed, no. I never thought of such a thing as falling in love with Mr. Carlyle.
Then you don't love him?
No. But I like him very much, and he is so good to me.
If you do not love Mr. Carlyle, how comes it that you are so wise in the distinction between liking and loving? It cannot be that you're in love with anyone else.
I shall love my husband in time.
Who has been staying at Castle Marling since I left?
Mrs. Leveson came down.
Yeah, I was alluding to gentlemen, young men.
Only Francis Leveson.
Francis Leveson? You've never been so foolish as to fall in love with him?
I never...
Isabel, Captain Leveson is not a good man. Drop his acquaintance, encourage no intimacy with him.
I have already dropped it, and I shall not take it up again. But Lady Mountseven must think well of him, or she would not have him there.
She thinks none too well of him. None can do so of Francis Leveson. But this does not solve the enigma of your marriage with Carlyle. On the contrary, it renders it the more unaccountable.
Lord Mountseven, they told me you were here.
Isabel, I'm sorry to turn you out. I suppose you have only the one sitting room. I wish to say a few words to Mr. Carlyle.
Very well. If that is what you wish.
Now then, how came this marriage about, sir? Do you possess so little honour that, taking advantage of my absence, you must intrude yourself into my family and clandestinely beguile Lady Isabel into marrying beneath her?
There has been nothing clandestine in my conduct towards Lady Isabel Vane. There shall be nothing but honour in my conduct towards Lady Isabel Carlyle. Your lordship has been misinformed.
I have not been informed at all, sir. I was allowed to learn this from the public papers. I, the only relative of Lady Isabel.
When I proposed to Lady Isabel...
Only a month ago,
my first action after Isabel accepted me was to write to you.
And pray where did you address the letter?
Lady Mountseven could not give me the address. She said if I would entrust the letter to her, she would forward it, for she expected daily to hear from you. I did give her the letter and heard no more of the matter. Except that her ladyship sent me a message that, as you had returned no reply, you, of course, approved.
Is this fact,
my lord? Whatever may be my defects in your eyes, I am at least a man of truth. Until this moment, the suspicion that you were in ignorance of the contemplated marriage never occurred to me.
So far, then, I beg your pardon, Mr. Carlyle. But how came this marriage about at all? How came it to be hurried over in this unseemly fashion?
I warn you that the facts will not bear a pleasant sound to you, Lord Mountseven.
Allow me to be the judge of that.
Business took me to Castle Marling. After your own and Isabel's invitation, it was natural that I should call at your house. I found Isabel ill-treated and miserable. Far from enjoying a happy home there.
What, sir? Ill-treated and miserable?
Ill-treated even to blows, my lord. I learned that from your little son.
From my son?
It aroused all my feelings of indignation. It excited in me an irresistible impulse to emancipate her from this cruel life and take her where she would find affection and, I hope, happiness. There was only one way in which I could do this, and I risked it. I asked her to become my wife and return to her home at East Lynne.
Then am I to understand that when you called that day at my house, you carried no intention of proposing to Isabel?
Not any. It was a sudden step called forth by the circumstances under which I found her. I will not deny that at East Lynne I learned to love her, but I could have carried my love silently within me to the end of my life and never betrayed it, but for that unexpected visit to Castle Marling. Your lordship now perceives, I hope, there has been nothing clandestine in my conduct towards Lady Isabel.
I refused your hand when you came in, Mr. Carlyle, as you may have observed. Perhaps you will refuse yours now, though I should be proud to shake it. When I find myself in the wrong, I'm not above acknowledging the fact. And I must state my opinion that you have behaved most kindly and honorably.
I will not refuse my hand.
There it is.
On a Friday night, about a month after the wedding, Mr. Carlyle and his wife came home. They were expected, and Miss Carlyle, attired in a handsome dark silk dress and a new cap, went to the hall to receive them.
You here, Cornelia? That's kind. How are you?
Isabel, this is my sister.
Miss Cornelia?
I hope you are well, ma'am. You would like to go upstairs and take your things off before supper, ma'am?
Thank you. I will go to my rooms, but do not require supper. We have dined.
Then what would you like to take?
Some tea, if you please. I'm very thirsty.
Tea? So late as this? Oh, I don't know that they have boiling water. Oh, you'd never sleep a wink all night if you took tea at 11 o'clock.
Oh. Then never mind. It is of no consequence. Do not let me give trouble.
Oh, very well, ma'am. Just as you wish.
Isabel, my darling, what ails you?
I'm tired, I think, and coming into the house again made me think of Papa.
Oh.
I should like to go to my rooms, Archibald, but I don't know which they are.
We have made up the best rooms, those next to the library. Shall I go up with you, ma'am?
Well, that's very kind of you, Cornelia, but I'll take Isabel up. Come, my dear. The lamps are not even lit. And there's no fire. Things seem all at sixes and sevens in the house. I fancy the servants must have misunderstood my letter and not have expected us until tomorrow night.
Archibald, I feel very tired and low-spirited. May I undress at once and not go down again tonight?
May you not? Have you forgotten that you're at last in your own house?
I have not forgotten.
What will you take, Isabel? Some tea?
No, thank you.
Oh, but you must take something. You complained of thirst in the carriage.
Water will do. Will be best for me, I mean. Marvel can get it for me.
Nonsense. I'll find you some wine. Marvel must help you undress. Cornelia, I do not understand what is going on. Where are the servants?
Gone away.
Gone away? What for?
Archibald Carlyle, how could you go and make a fool of yourself? If you must have married, were there not plenty of young ladies in your own sphere of society?
I wrote you a full statement of my motives and actions, Cornelia. I am not disposed to enter upon a further discussion of the subject. And let us return to the topic of the servants. Where are they?
I sent them away because they were superfluous encumbrances. We have four in the house, and my lady has brought a fine maid. I see making five. I have come here to live.
And your own house?
I have let it furnished. The people entered today. You cannot turn me out of East Glynn into the road, Archibald. Oh, there will be enough expense without our keeping on two houses. And most people in your place would jump at the prospect of my living here. Oh, your wife will be mistress. I do not intend to take her honours from her, but I shall save her a world of trouble in management and be useful to her as a housekeeper. She will be glad of that, inexperienced as she is. I dare say she never gave a domestic order in her life.
Well, there's certainly room for you at East Lynn, Cornelia, but...
A little too much. I think a house half its size might content us all and still have been grand enough for Lady Isabel.
East Lynn is mine.
So is your folly.
And with regard to servants, I shall certainly keep as many as I think necessary. And now, if you will excuse me, I shall take my wife some wine and water. What is it, Isabel? Why are you sitting all muffled up like that?
I grew nervous after Marple went up. I could not find the bell, and that made me worse, so I came up to the chair and covered my head over, hoping someone would come up.
I've been talking to Cornelia, but what made you nervous?
Oh, I was very foolish. I kept thinking of frightful things that would come into my mind. Oh, do not blame me, Archibald. This is the room Papa died in.
Blame you, my darling.
I thought of that dreadful story about the bat that the servant told, and I kept on thinking, supposing they're at the windows now behind the blind. And then I was afraid to look at the bed. I fancied I might...
Now, take your wine and water, my darling. Your rooms will be changed tomorrow.
No. No, let us remain indeed.
Yeah.
I should like to feel that Papa was once their occupant. I won't grow nervous again.
I must tell you about my conversation with Cornelia. She wishes to remain with us. I do not know what to decide. On the one hand, I think she might save you the worry of household management, but on the other, I fancy we shall be happier by ourselves.
It must be as you and she please.
Isabel, I wish it to be as you please. My chief object in life now is your happiness.
Let her stay, Archibald. She will not incommode our happiness.
At any rate, it can be tried for a month or two. We shall see how it works.
Can I speak to you a moment, if you please, my lady?
Yes, Marvel. What is it?
I do not think that I'm suited to a situation such as this, my lady. I have been led to believe that the establishment carried the number of servants suitable to a house such as this. If your ladyship pleases, I should like to leave at once.
At once?
Today, my lady.
There's been some mistakes about the servants, Marvel, but it will be remedied as soon as possible. And I told you before I married that Mr. Carlyle's establishment would be a limited one.
My lady, perhaps I could put up with that, but I could never stop in the house with that... with Miss Carlyle. I feel, my lady, we have both tempers that would clash and might be flying at each other. I am very sorry, my lady, but I cannot help myself. My feelings are delicate. And I couldn't bear to spend another day under the same roof as that female image.
Yes, what is it?
Joyce Allen's on, my lady.
Oh, Joyce, come in.
I've come to help you dress for dinner, my lady, should you require me.
Thank you, Joyce.
I'm not much accustomed to a lady's maid's duties, but Miss Carlyle has sent me, my lady, to do what I can for you, if you'll allow me.
It is very kind of Miss Carlyle.
And if you please to trust me with the keys of your things, I'll take charge of them, my lady, until you're suited with the maid.
I don't know anything about the keys. I never keep them.
Oh.
But I should be grateful for your help, Joyce.
Archibald, what are you thinking of? I will not permit it.
What are you talking about, Cornelia? Permit what?
The carriage to be taken out on a Sunday. I am a religious woman, ma'am, and I cannot countenance Sunday travelling. I was taught by catechism, Lady Isabel.
It was just, over with the great theatre. Archibald, perhaps if we walk very slowly to the church, it would not help.
Okay, now you go to your room, Isabel, and get ready. We will leave at 10:30. Isabel could not bear to walk in this heat, Cornelia, and I shall certainly not allow her to attempt it. We shall go in early.
Is she made of sugar and would melt?
She is a gentle, tender plant, one that I have taken to my bosom and vowed before my Maker to love and to cherish. And by his help I will do so.
Once more, as in the year gone by, St. Jude's Church was in a flutter of expectation. It expected to see a whole paraphernalia of bridal finery, but again it was doomed to disappointment, for Isabel had not put off mourning for her father. For the first time in his life, Mr. Carlyle took possession of the pew belonging to East Lynne, filling the place where the poor Earl used to sit. After the service, they went across the churchyard to the west corner.
Must we go this way?
The carriage is meeting us by the gate.
I did not wish to pass by Father's tomb, but here it is.
Not here, and now, my darling. Strive for calmness.
Seems but the other day he was at church with me, and now, here.
I know.
There ought to be railings round the tomb.
Yes, I thought so, and I suggested it to Lord Mount Seven, but he appeared to think differently. I'll have it done.
Oh, I put you to great expense.
An expense I would not be without for the whole world. You know it, Isabel.
And I have nothing to repay you with.
Ah, here's John with the carriage. Let's go then, Isabel.
What a great throng of people there were in the church today.
Yes.
And all in their finery.
They turned out to see you, my darling.
Who was that pretty girl who looked at you so closely as we drove off? She looked so pale. What is her name?
Oh, the girl with the blue eyes.
Yes.
Hmm.
She looked so earnestly at you.
Why, that is some Barbara Hare.
That was part two of East Lynne by Mrs. Henry Wood, adapted for radio in seven parts by Michael Bakewell. With Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moya Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Edridge as Francis Levison, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. Emma Vane was played by Margaret Wall, Bill by Tim Reynolds, Lord Vane by Stephen Thorne, Marvel by Susie Brown, Warburton by Paul Gregory, Joyce by Joe Kendall, William Vane by Alexander Goodman, and The Butler by Michael Tudor Barnes. The pianist was Martin Goldstein. East Lynne was directed by David Johnston.